They aren't on Twitter looking for someone to say, "I wrote a book. It has a space pirate." Like, they don't want to read that tweet. They don't care. Who are you? Why should they care?
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, once again to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am, as always, Nikki P. My guest today is Christine Erickson, wife and I can't remember what you told me already, but we'll say purveyor of propaganda for author Devin Erickson. How are we doing today?
I am doing well. Busy times here, getting ready for the audiobook Kickstarter and have a friend coming over for dinner and just lots of things, but excited to talk with you here tonight.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, since you mentioned it, everyone's going to be asking, what is for dinner?
I just wanted a one pot meal. So I'm doing some beef stroganoff. We get our cows by the half cow.
That's the way to do it.
Right. So I took some sirloin out of the freezer last night, and that's coming to temperature in the oven right now. Have the onions and mushrooms cooked. And when this is over, it should be a quick sear the beef, add the labneh.
So that's the key to marketing right there, folks, is meals that you don't have to do much with. You just set them and forget them, right?
Yes. While still putting perhaps too much work and thought into it, because if you're just going with the, what's that thing? It's not shake and bake, but it's like that, you know, just one of those boxes of like, here's your thing.
Hamburger helper.
Yes. I mean, it works-ish, but put a little more thought into it.
Well, every college kid that's listening to this just freaked out, so I don't want to put any more thought into it. But anyways, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Christine. Why don't you give us a little bit of your background, a little bit about Devin's background, and kind of where you guys fit into this whole modern publishing world?
Yeah. You know, that's a fun story. So first me, Christine Erickson. I'm actually a software engineer by trade. But the way I came to this is, you know, I have a little bit of sales in my background. Back in high school, I was the minister of propaganda for my high school's literary magazine. Amusingly enough, I didn't actually read the magazine because high schoolers write awful things. I was uninterested. But the getting people to submit their poems and stories and art to it, and then getting people to purchase this delightful magazine, I had a lot of fun with that. And then in college, you know, I did some working with the school newspaper, because at an engineering school, the standards for working on the school newspaper are phenomenally low. And then, you know, like sold raffle tickets at a sorority event. I don't know. And so many, many years later, when my husband, you know, decided, hey, I'm going to write a novel. And the way he came to that is, you know, he'd always been sort of good at writing little fun little flash fiction bits and stuff. And during lockdowns, he had a little bit of time on his hands and he watched Brandon Sanderson's YouTube lectures on writing, and something just clicked. Something Devin says a lot is you can't tell. Nobody can tell you how to write. They can only tell you how they write. And Sanderson's process and Devin's process are very similar. And so listening to him talk really just made the, how do I go from a compelling, interesting little scene to how do I craft a long, compelling, satisfying narrative? Devin sat down for 9 months, started writing a book and didn't stop, and then had a manuscript, which then went through a very thorough editing, beta reading, etc. process. And he was a little worried there near the end, because he had something that he was very proud of, something that he knew was good. And he was afraid no one would ever read it. And so I said, no, I too know that what you wrote is amazing, and I am going to make sure that the world takes note. And so after swearing that, it was then my job to make sure that people had the opportunity to connect with his fantastic novel, Theft of Fire, Orbital Space Number 1. And things sort of progressed from there, and now he's got well over 700 ratings on Amazon. He's got a good number of sales. We don't really release hard sales numbers. I have a lot of fun at science fiction conventions, tabling. We just got back from one. It didn't have the best attendance, but we sold every book but one. And as Steve Jackson pointed out, that's the best number to sell, because if you sell out, you're kicking yourself for not bringing more books. So,
That is very true. What did Devin do before he was a writer, I guess?
Most recently, primarily a software engineer as well. He's a little more on the embedded stuff.
Okay, so it's a family business.
I mean, no, but just similar fields. He's done various, a little more lower level, like closer to the metal engineering than me. Some of his engineering is classified stuff that I can't really talk about. Some of it's AI related, some of it's, you know, commerce related, just some of it industrial automation. So yeah, just various engineering.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated when engineers start writing, because it's not generally what you expect people to do from that, like, that headspace.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of people who say that. But I think for science fiction, there's a surprising amount of overlap, because in both cases, especially with technology, it's, you know, you have this thought, and basically out of pure imagination, you're able to make it exist in the world in a way that, say, civil engineering, you know, you still need to obey the laws of physics. But for software engineering and with writing, you just have this idea that you then make either live inside the computer with the right combination of words, or live inside people's minds with the right combination of words. And so I think it's a surprisingly natural transition.
Well, certainly for, like, the science fiction community, obviously he's in good company. Asimov was a scientist. One of the up-and-comers that I like a lot, James Craig, he's an engineer. So they, within that particular genre, there's definitely some overlap. Now, what's Theft of Fire? Like, what kind of science fiction is it? Tell me a little bit more about this book.
Of course. So I'll do my little pitch that I sort of put together this weekend for selling it at the table. Theft of Fire is the story of a down-on-his-luck asteroid miner. He's hit rock bottom. He's turned to piracy to pay the bills. Things are not going great. And in swoops a gene-twisted Martian heiress to blackmail him, to send them onto a suicide mission to the frozen edge of the solar system. And he does not want to do this, so he fights like hell to stop it, until he finds out what's out there and what exactly this heist she's trying to pull is. Then things get really interesting. It has action. It has a little bit of romance. It has a delightful third character that I'm not going to tell you anything about, because she's a surprise, but also she's on the cover. You know she exists. It's a character-driven hard sci-fi. If you liked The Martian and its sort of irreverent grit, if you liked The Expanse and its solar system spanning colonization without laser swords or faster than light travel, and if you sort of miss the golden age of science fiction, then this is the novel for you, and you're just going to be in for a really, really good time.
So how much time did you spend on your SEO and crafting the particular words for your copywriting for that?
For that, that just sort of came together over the weekend when I was tabling. So that's not like written down anywhere yet.
Well, the reason I ask is because just in like your quick initial pitch, within the first paragraph, I knew it was a hard sci-fi book without you even having to tell me. Just off of a few keywords.
You know, I think in the Amazon keywords, I think I have asteroid mining. I think I have, I don't remember what's, you know, like something like gene twisted. It kind of, you know, it's certainly evocative of a certain kind of story.
Yeah. The minute you say asteroid mining, I'm like, oh, okay. So we're talking hard sci-fi, the old stuff, the good stuff. And obviously you name drop The Expanse. So that's gonna place it in good company. Now, I'm going to imagine, this will be my personal question here. So I'm imagining Devin probably would not be a fan of the politics of the guys that actually write The Expanse.
You know, I don't think either of us are particularly familiar with them. I actually wasn't aware that S.A. Corey was two individuals until like 6 months ago. But Devin is a libertarian. And his novel was actually a finalist for the Libertarian Futurist Society's Prometheus Award recently. But he's very against books being sort of didactic or being used as a platform to tell the reader what to think. So, of course, his libertarian views come through in the story and the society he instructs, but there's no Ayn Rand, here's my pages of why objectivism is correct lectures.
Well, and the reason I asked that particular question is because I was a huge fan of the Expanse books and was fairly aware of the politics of the guys that wrote them and was surprised endlessly at how even-handed they actually managed to play the, you know, macro political games that went on in those books. I'm a libertarian myself, and, you know, there's a lot of talk of like anarchists and anarchism in there, and I thought they painted a pretty even-handed brush. It's like, yes, big militaristic societies suck. Yes, overly capitalistic, you know, societies controlled by small cabals of, you know, elites suck. Yeah, and guess what? Even anarchism has its flaws. There's different things that work with all of them. So, like, the idea of people being able to write something so well-crafted despite their own personal views certainly was like a breath of fresh air, like in today's world where so much of ideology is the core of books and usually ham-fisted at best.
Yeah, I think the mark of a good writer is they're able to write someone who disagrees wholly with their own politics, but who has their own, but who, if a reader is reading that character, they can recognize themselves in that. It's not, oh, here's a sock puppet looking like an idiot asshole so that the author can score political points.
I mean, we all, as much as I might like Ayn Rand's books, I also realize they are pedantic as hell. And I guess the rule is just write a good book. If it happens to have libertarian themes, that's good. Because every time someone tries to write a libertarian anything, it always turns out terrible.
Yeah. Or a insert philosophy here anything. There's I won't name the author, but there's some fellow who came out with a book around when Devin's book published that we jokingly refer to as Republicans Bad, the novel. And it's a sci-fi book, but like it's basically Republicans Bad, the novel. And it's just like even people who agree with that in the reviews are like, buddy, this is just too much.
Right on. Now, you two, how long has this book been out, and how long have you been working on the raising awareness, building up Devin's profile online? How long has that process been going on so far?
Yeah, so the book launched on 11/11 of 2023. So it's been about 7, 8, something like that months. I don't know, math. And started trying to raise awareness, you know, a little bit before it. You know, the number of pre-orders we had, you know, it wasn't particularly impressive. We had some, we had pre-orders, but you know, it's what might be, depending upon a day, it might be one day of sales, it might be 4 day of sales. You know, it's within that range. And Devin, you know, most of Devin's buyers become aware of Theft of Hire through Twitter. I've sort of long been a bit of a Twitter addict, watching it and stuff. And so decided like, okay, I'm going to have an account that's me personally, you know, as Christine Erickson, you know, because anyone who I'm friends with on there, I want them to be able to just mute this account so I don't drive them insane. So I created an account. I was like, hey, Devin, you know, you should have an account too. And around that time, Elon had purchased Twitter and had introduced the concept of long tweets. So more than 280 characters. And Devin is a loquacious fellow. He is not someone easily contained to 280 characters. So I think he was on there a little bit before that feature rolled out. And it was just like, it was just maddening for him, you know, because he's got things to say and he's just like too constrained and very frustrated with the website. But then once it became a place that's a little more like, okay, you can have a long conversation, which is his preferred conversational mode. He just sort of went off. And so there, he had a rather public disagreement with a well-known figure around the new year, so in December. And that sort of took off because Devin is sort of uniquely able to shape the feelings and thoughts people are having into words that make them go, yes, that's what I've been thinking. So he went from, you know, maybe 1,000, maybe 2,000 followers to like 20,000 basically overnight. And now he's, I don't know, more than double. He's 40 something. I don't know. He's some number of followers and delightfully interesting people because he's a thoughtful person who seems to attract thoughtful, interesting.
Well, and honestly, he's in the wrong business. He should be doing copywriting because for as long as his posts are, I'm not someone who likes to read long posts. And I can't tell you how many times I've been tricked into just like following the rabbit hole down on one of his posts before I know it. I'm like, I'm sitting here for half an hour reading this. Like, and I never left Twitter. Like I'm still on the site. I didn't have to go read somebody's blog to get it. It's just very compelling. I have to get to the end of this thing because it's just written in such a way as I just keep being interested.
Yeah, no, we're actually working with his book editor to sort of extract some of his long posts, sort of combine them for flow and clarity and combine them on topics and stuff and move them into a more durable location on Substack. And that way people will also have the opportunity to give Devin money because he is paid by Twitter, you know, with their monetization, but there's a lot more monetary upside to, Substack.
I'll ask a question. If you're talking Substack, and with the level of followers that he has, why wouldn't he just build his own site and monetize it? Especially with like the history of the finances of, Substack.
You know, I think Substack is decently pro-free speech. Actually, the CEO of Substack follows Devin on Twitter. So if he gets canceled, he'll have a direct line to be like, hey, what happened to me?
It's not the canceling that I'm concerned with. It's the Substack still being here in 2 years issue because of the ability to keep the website profitable.
Oh, I wasn't aware there were any issues there. Well, if they can't do it with the economies of scale, I don't see how he would be able to do it as a single person. And the reason we're interested in Substack instead of spinning up his own pay-per-view, you know, pay platform or something is just like, I'm a software engineer and I know how challenging that would be. There are a lot of very good features built into Substack, including discovery. You know, that is its own little ecosystem that allows people to share articles in a way that is a lot more natural and findable than just his own website. Alas, you know, it's no longer the heyday of the 90s where people are just visiting individual sites all the time. Platforms have really taken over. And so if Devin were to only publish his words on, you know, devinerickson.com/blog or something.
Well, I'm not saying only. I guess my point is the end goal should always be your own website, because you control that. Like, the idea with platforms is they're a good place to corral people to go to where your actual product is. I guess is the way that in the marketing world, that's the way we're trained, because why should I be giving all of my money and splitting it with other people when I could be selling the real product here and giving someone just like the finder's fee, I guess.
Well, for this, it's we do actually get access to the email addresses of people who subscribe, so we can export that. And if
Substack's good about that. I use them for my own website. I pull them off of there and use my own autoresponder.
Yeah. And like I said, this is more just a monetization opportunity. Devin has this content already on Twitter that he's put out there for free. And so we told his editor, hey, we'll split Substack revenues with you if you help us just sort of make things to put out there. And yeah, it's a nice platform with an existing audience and community that both people who follow him on Twitter can then migrate over there and then spread news of his Substack to their sort of existing social networks on there.
And I'm curious if given that plan, have you thought about actually taking it the step further and releasing a book of the long form musings of Devin? I bring that up because I hate Substack. Like, everything about it annoys me. It's a terrible medium for reading anything, and I use it only because I realize other people are there.
Fair. That actually also is a longer term plan. You know, it's not something we want to take away from Devin's time right now, but after we collect things on Substack, then, you know, they're still ours. We'll be able to then collect them and say, okay, now they are in a nonfiction book form. So hooray.
I'm good. Hopefully people learn that. So that's if you ever go to one of those guys, like, I will help you make a book in, you know, 9 days or 2 weeks. And that's always the first thing is, well, why don't you just start taking your Substack articles and then we'll get them all nice and edited, and then you'll have a book of Substack. So it's good. You're thinking long term. You got the pieces in the puzzle. Part of the reason I have you on is because I know what you're doing is working. And so many people out there are banging their head against the wall right now with things that aren't working. And so it's good to talk to someone who's actually gotten traction and turned that into something.
You know, it's definitely scattering seeds. You throw something on the ground and you hope it's going to grow. And it can be a little frustrating because there are certainly plenty of things that I've tried that have not worked out. You know, and there's things that do kind of work out, but in a sort of incremental way of A leads to B leads to C, and oh, look, C is great. And I wouldn't have been here without A, except A didn't feel useful at all. And just the fun ways little things can play off of each other. So
I'm curious, what are some things that you thought for sure would work and then produce zero when it was all said and done?
There is a very interesting person who has been gifted a copy of Theft of Fire by one of their friends. And I'm hoping this person, who has a large audience, will read it and love it and talk about it. And they haven't yet. And I don't want to say who it is.
No, that's fine. The scenario is enough to...
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. What else? Just some, you know, occasional things where it's like, oh, look, you know, there's a mention over here that hasn't really converted to sales very much. I would say Devin has had a lot of podcasts, YouTube, etc. appearances, some of them on platforms that are very large. And those only, you know, they convert a little bit to sales, but not as much as you would expect.
One of the things I actually stress with people, because where I come from, is, you know what, when you go and you do that podcast, all too often the podcaster is going to tweet about it once, and then that's going to be the only mention of that podcast. So if for some reason that name doesn't strike somebody, they may skip over that episode. Like, I will tell people forever, do the podcast, but what I always recommend is making content out of other people's podcasts yourself. Go download it off YouTube, cut it into shorts and clips, and like re-upload it yourself, because it gives you the ability to turn what was maybe a meteor spot and a chance to make a new friend, a new relationship in the industry, But it also allows you to turn that into content that's going to be more apt to turn people back towards you than the original podcast itself would be.
That does remind me. There's some fellow who does sort of like takes long form things and turns them into clips. And he's like, hey, I would like to do this work for you. And I was like, yeah, possibly. Yeah, let's talk about it. And I need to follow up on that.
I do that work myself too. So
I would do it myself, except I don't want to.
Oh, believe me, I get it.
So
when I do it, I usually get paid pretty well for it to get over the I don't want to do this.
That makes sense. Yeah, for that, I think it'll be another revenue share thing. It's like, okay, if we can measure exactly, okay, these clips turn into these sales because it's this kind of link, then hooray.
So you guys sounds like are definitely deep down the rabbit hole on your analytics then also.
Ish. No, I mean, that's another.
Well, if you're talking about tracking where individual sales are coming from, like you have to be paying attention, I guess, at least a little bit.
We try, you know, and a lot of that is just looking at like, you know, a Twitter post. I can see, oh, hey, how many people clicked this? And we can see on our website, okay, what kind of traffic are we getting? But that's, and I, you know, when I print bookmarks, the QR code there is, you know, a specific trackable QR code. Bookmarks don't. People don't scan QR codes on bookmarks. The bookmarks look good, though.
Bookmarks actually have a different benefit, I find. And it's that it's part of the answer to when I talk to people, and I was like, well, I'm not in my marketing cycle. I can't do a podcast right now because I'm not actively promoting anything. And one of the things, this is one of the reasons I like the Twitter world, especially for someone like Devin, is that you have to stay relevant in people's minds. That's why an email list is important. That's why regular posting on Substack, Twitter, and things like that. Because if people go a year, 2 years, however long it takes you to write that next book, without hearing from you, they're going to forget about you. That bookmark, whether or not they click or do anything on it, that is something they can visually see. You know, even if it's in somebody else's book, it's keeping you in mind. And that is the thing that like you can't be overlooked, because it's with all the things that are out there today that can draw and grab attention, like being able to keep anyone's attention and keep forcing your way in there, even if it's like feels subliminal, is super important.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons that I'm very interested in doing. So there's sort of swag and there's merch. Swag is sort of the free thing that's just, hey, name of item, keep this in mind. You know, it's the bookmark that says Theft of Fire. It's the free pin at the convention. It's the whatever. And then also merchandise being a thing that is for a fan. So I have some things planned for the upcoming Kickstarter for example, one of the things that I want to do that I haven't done yet is I want to get a logo made for Warnock Engineering, you know, the engineering company inside the book, and have some, you know, nice little paper notebooks that say Warnock Engineering and have some fun little bits on the inside flap of, you know, like, oh, registering an asteroid or something, you know.
And you're getting track jackets made, right?
Oh, you know, I don't think we're quite there. but yeah, just having
these roving gangs of Warnock Industries.
There we go. But yeah, just sort of these little bits that keep Theft of Fire in people's minds. But yeah, as what you were saying for sort of keeping your author presence alive, that's one of the reasons that Devin's nonfiction writing is sort of a useful top of the sales funnel raise awareness thing, because he's writing on topics that people already find interesting. They aren't on Twitter looking for someone to say, I wrote a book. It has a space pirate. Like, they don't want to read that tweet. They don't care. Who are you? Why should they care? And so his nonfiction writing is a way for him to demonstrate that, yes, I have a decent command to the English language. I can compose interesting thoughts in a logical manner in a way that makes you think. And it's like, not everyone who's reading this, in fact, the vast majority of people who are reading this are not then going to say, aha, I'm going to purchase your fiction writing immediately or even next month, because they might not even like fiction books or science fiction books.
Well, marketing is long tail. If we're not hard at sales, we're about planting the seed, becoming ubiquitous in their lives so that like eventually like I've been looking at this thing for years. I've got to pick it up. Like, that's the idea. Like, even if you're doing something like SEO, SEO doesn't fix your website the day you do it. Like, you're talking 6 months from now, you might actually start reaping benefits on getting your SEO locked in, because it takes that long for Google to learn how it fits into, like, its own ecosystem and let the algorithm work. So it's definitely having, like, the long-distance runner's mentality, the marathoner's mentality about marketing and being able to say, like, I know I don't see it now, but I know in the long run this is going to be useful is something that's you're either have and can deal with, or you're going to be sad a lot of the time when you're trying to sell.
Well, I'm halfway in between. Sad a lot, you know, because so often Devin will get replies to his tweets and people are like, wow, you know, I'm going to have to finally get your book one of these days. And I'm like, yes, yes, you do. Just, you're going to enjoy it.
Should have bought it 6 months ago.
And it's so frustrating. Just get it. It's great.
And another thing you mentioned, I want to bring up, because you mentioned it and I didn't, and that's something that I've certainly been bringing up recently a lot on the podcast. And it's the idea of talking about what people are already talking about. It's the idea of interruption marketing is what modern marketing is called, because you're on these platforms where they're not about talking to you, and you have to stop them from doing the thing that they're actively doing to pay attention to you. And the best way to do that is to create the content that draws them in already. And so what we say marketing is you're trying to enter the conversations they're already having in their heads. And then you maybe pivot at some point if you're to do the hard sell. But the idea is, if you want the attention, you have to talk about what they want to talk about. Like, that's how you manage that. So I'm just excited to have heard somebody other than me say it on the podcast.
You know, and it of course makes sense that there's a term for this. You know, we've just sort of fallen into this and are probably reinventing the wheel in 6 million different ways. But yeah, no, that's, if anyone watching this takes away anything, it's that you have to be thoughtful and you have to be intentional and you have to consider your audience. You know, where are they right now? What are they thinking? What do they want? Are they even the audience you're wanting to be talking with? You know, a lot of marketing is saying, hey, people who would like this, here this is. But also, you want to be pushing away the people who wouldn't like your product. If a person wants a super, super spicy Christian romance, don't read Theft of Fire. It's not that.
Okay. Thank God.
You know, or there's, yeah. So it's, if someone wants the political polemic that will tell people off, or how dare you use air conditioning, here's a picture of the hellscape that, you know, humanity will face because we dared use slightly too much carbon, you're going to be disappointed by Theft of Fire. Don't read it. Go read something else. So be intentional in who you're talking to, who you're pushing away. And even, you know, something like Theft of Fire, it does have a very broad appeal, but we sort of market to a more narrow band. You know, you've seen Devin's tweets. They are not for everyone. There are more people who would like his book than who would like his tweets. But not the entire science fiction reading world is going to be exposed to his tweets. So our goal is, okay, well, people who would like his tweets, they'll read Theft of Fire. They will love it. Their coworker who would be put off by his Twitter presence, they're going to be, you know, you read Theft of Fire and you tell your coworker, hey, Bob, I read this. It's so fun. You're going to love it. And then Bob doesn't need to know it. Yeah, yeah. So
signal to noise ratio, you put out there for the optimum. If you put out there for the avatar, these are the people that are going to love this more than anything. And you bring those people, because when you bring those people in, inevitably, they will talk about it. And they're going to talk about how great it is. And it may not talk about, like, the crap that other people won't like about it. So, like, when other people who aren't, you know, the whatever side of the line person that's not going to like this, they're getting it, oh, there's a great science fiction story and I like that. Whereas the people that maybe come in from Twitter are going to be the super fans. They're going to be the ones that have to have everything. And those are the people you want to talk to the most, develop the relationship with. Because keeping them happy is what means you have other people doing the work that you don't want to be doing of talking about the book all the time in the future. So, well, Christine, thank you so much for coming on today. You actually summed up so much so good that I don't even have to ask the question. Like, what is the one thing that you'd like people to pay attention to? Because you already hit the one thing you think people should pay attention to. So the last question I have for you is, where can I send people to pick up a copy of the book?
Of course. Well, the easiest thing would, you can just type Theft of Fire into Google. And I think it should be probably the top results somewhere, you know, wherever people like to read. If you like Kobo, find it on Kobo. If you like Amazon, find it on Amazon. Go to Devin Erickson, Erickson.com to find everything you need to know about Theft of Fire, Orbital Space Number One. It is not going to be on Audible because Audible does not really believe in paying authors money. But we are about to launch a Kickstarter for the Theft of Fire audiobook, which I am so excited about. Devin's actually started the recording with his amazing audio, amazing voice actors. We're doing 3-person full cast. They're recording live together so they can play off each other. It's not person recording here and person recording here and then it gets jammed together. It is
personal taste thing, that's all.
No, and it's not one of those like, hey, we're gonna have like he walks down the hall and we go clink, clink, clink. It's like, no, it's just Devin doesn't like the sounds of men doing women's voices or women doing men's voices. And because it's character driven, their voices are so integral to the story. So,
well, I'm going to end up listening to the audiobook version anyways when it comes out because that's how I take in my books.
Well, but make sure you sign up for the audiobook mailing list. The link for that can be found on the carousel at devinerickson.com.
Awesome. Once again, thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, it's been fun. You have a nice night.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki B. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.